This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Denise Raymond, also from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for April 9th, episode 1909, and this episode is brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, Horse World.
It's Monday.
Monday is my favorite time of year.
This is Horses in the Morning with your lovable hosts, Jamie Jennings.
I am the queen. You listen to me.
I'm sorry that people are so jealous of me, but I can't help it that I'm popular.
Glenn the Geek.
You look especially radiant today, Your Grace.
I'm going to do a terrific show today because I'm good enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Happy Monday.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Monday morning. Jamie is out on vacation today. She is in Hawaii, which is one of the distinct advantages to having a husband that gets free airline flights and works for the airlines.
Lucky lady.
I know. You can go anywhere you want. It's kind of cool. So she's out today, but we have Denise, our guest wrangler here, filling in today.
Yay!
Thank you for stopping by. She actually is in the studio.
Yes, live in the studio.
Amazing. We don't get that too often, so it's fun to have. And Denise, of course, you it's been a while since you've been over hosting, actually.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
You filled in for a while there before we had another host for the Western episode.
Yes, before Tara so graciously stepped in. And
well, we'll probably get you back for that too here coming up. So we appreciate you coming over for today. I know you spent a whole weekend riding this weekend. I saw all your posts.
Yes, I've been doing a lot of riding lately.
And you can do that when you're in Florida and everybody now is mad at you that's having another snowstorm in the Northeast this morning.
Oh, I know. But, you know, soon we're going to be so hot that it's going to be too hot to ride. So I'm trying to ride every chance I get right now.
Yeah, they don't buy that when they're in snow and ice.
I know. It's hard to even imagine that it's snowing up there, isn't it?
It is that way. When you move to Florida, the first couple of years, you still can kind of imagine it. But then you kind of lose track and you forget that people are actually in snow.
I think it's like a whole nother world.
It is. It's like, I do forget. But the pictures on Facebook remind us. The listeners make sure to remind us.
I think those are from way back in January.
It's been a horrible winter. I'm so glad I don't live up there.
Me too.
Thank you very much.
Me too.
I'll put up with the hot summer. Thank you.
Is it snowing up in Kentucky where you lived before?
It was last week.
Was it really?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Oh, and my mom messaged me yesterday and said it was 38 degrees there yesterday morning in South Carolina. So I said, Mom, you got to come to Florida.
There you go. Actually, yeah, it's any place above here has been having bad weather. I know through the Smokies, they were having snow all the time, and it's been a mess. Well, we are bringing you a show today. Even though Jamie's not here, we'll be here all week. We'll have different co-hosts filling in, and Jennifer's going to tell us what's coming up on today's show.
Well, coming up on today's Omega Alpha Equine Monday edition, Dr. Chang stops by for his monthly visit, and he's going to talk about respiratory health and how to make it happen. And then we are going to decode microchipping for horses, and the wacky world of Horse Nation finds Leslie Wiley stranded in Tryon, North Carolina. So stay tuned for the preview.
Yeah, but we're going to have her on, and she's going to give us a report of the test events over the weekend. Eventing was there doing their test event, and also vaulting was there. And we'll be recording a WEG show where we'll get more in-depth about that this week as well. And Jennifer, hit refresh again. I have a new number for Leslie. So we are going to do our daily winnies. I have mine today.
Mm-hmm.
Mine goes out to Alexandra Ireland, one of our terrific auditors, on her win over the weekend. I think it's on her new horse, too, or on one of her many horses. She won the Blenheim Spring Classic over the weekend, and congratulations to Alexandra for that. Good job, girl. Keep it up.
And my daily Winnie goes to Pat at Turtle Trail Farms Obstacles in Morriston, Florida, who graciously let me come to her place on Friday last week and bring a horse that is kind of new for me, a Paso, over to her place to just sort of run wild on her obstacles.
How'd that go with a Paso, by the way?
Because that's what it was, kind of, running wild.
How'd that go with a Paso?
It was so weird.
Yeah.
Because I've never really ridden a Paso before, and I've been kind of putzing around just at my house lately. But I took him, and he was great in hand. He didn't want to cross water, didn't want to do some of the obstacles. About 45 minutes into it, I had him doing most of the basic obstacles. So I thought, well, it'll be fun. Now I'll try to ride. It was like riding a riding lawnmower with a high idle. It was...
That's a great description.
No,
actually.
I got on. No, he has a great stop, but the minute you take your foot off the brake, he's off again. I mean, it was just the funniest feeling to me. And
is it smooth?
It was so smooth that it wasn't even scary. It was just like riding something
just weird
that you had to keep your foot on the brake if you didn't want to go anywhere, because the minute you let it off, he's just...
Does it seem like you're getting someplace, or does it seem like you're just... Yeah.
It was really like riding something, or maybe a little mini bike. He was just sort of whizzing all around everywhere. In fact, I was a little nervous about... I didn't ask him to do any of the bigger obstacles when I was on his back, because I noticed that he was, when he would get to something like the water obstacles, he would sit back like he thought he was going to jump things that were way bigger than he could possibly jump. And so when I was doing obstacles in hand with him, he was sitting back like that and then jumping into the water because he couldn't cross it. So he would just sort of jump and land in the middle. And so I thought, I don't really want to do that on his back. So we didn't, I mostly went around a lot of obstacles, and it was kind of cool riding around barrels and things like that, because he just sort of whizzed around the barrels, and it was totally different. It sure wasn't like any horse I've ever ridden before. And Pat at Turtle Trail was so great. She just sort of encouraged me. She sat back and laughed at me and encouraged me. And
well, it must have been kind of they're kind of a chuckle to watch normally.
Yes. Yeah. Well, she does lessons out there, so she likes to have people come out and ride around while she's doing lessons, because it kind of creates a show environment for her lesson students. So she had a really kind of antsy thoroughbred and student out there. And here I am whizzing around him, just, you know, speeding around, beep, 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 all around this thoroughbred. And he's looking like, what is going on? So it was cool. And we were just zipping around everything. It was...
Now, they tend to be on the smaller side too, don't they?
He's 13.3. So oh, yes, wow. He's little, but he's wide. He's a Paso, Peruvian Paso cross, we think.
Now, they actually do have different gaits, too.
Yes, and he kind of paddles his feet out a little bit, which is a Peruvian Paso gait as opposed to a Paso gait. And again, I have no idea what I'm doing. In fact, I was riding him in
That's
a halter.
That's what we love about you. You do all this stuff and have no clue, and you don't care.
I put a halter on him. I was riding him around in a halter, which is probably why I had no, you know,
brakes.
No brakes, you know. But I was just riding around, and all you can do is giggle. Because the gait is so funny, and you're on this little guy that feels like a mini bike or a lawnmower, and you're just riding all around. It was interesting. I want to trail ride him. I may have to go to the obstacle place a time or two more before I feel real confident about trail riding him. He wasn't afraid of anything, so that was a plus. So I think he's going to do well. I'm going to have to ride with other Paso people.
Okay, so do you think that everybody should have the opportunity to ride a Paso once?
Everybody should do it at least once.
Just for the giggles, if nothing else?
Well, you know they probably make kind of cool little spares. You know, everybody might need one for a spare horse. Maybe y'all need one.
Or if you want a nice smooth ride that day.
Yes. I had thought about making him my guest horse. I just don't know how my guests are going to feel about him.
Jennifer, you have to try a Paso.
Yeah. Yeah, Jennifer can ride him.
He's only 13.3, though. That is kind of tiny.
I feel like he's safe. You know, I don't think he's crazy. Just fast.
That's funny. Well, you've been doing a lot of writing. I wanted to take a little time at the beginning of the show because I don't think people realize how much. You're our guest wrangler, and Denise books all our guests for us. But she also rides all the time, and she tries almost every crazy, wacky thing you can think of. Your goal in life has to been try everything in the horse world, I think, at least once. And you just finished something called the 12-Week Horsemanship Challenge. What's that?
It actually is put on by some gals up north. It's called the Northwood Farms 2018 Horsemanship Challenge. She does it every year. She even has an app.
Now, when she says up north people, she means north of Ocala in Florida.
Somewhere up north. It's like Pennsylvania or somewhere
like
that.
Oh, it is? Mm-hmm. Okay.
But they do it every year. And last year I missed the deadline. They set a deadline for starting the challenge. And if you don't get in by the deadline, you don't get in. So this year I was determined I was going to try it. It started at the beginning of January and it's a 12-week challenge. And the idea is that you will get 30 rides in on your horse and 40 hours. And some people called the 40 hours horsemanship hours, so not everybody rode.
But so that's really four times a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I decided that I would do mine. I only counted my riding hours. I didn't count the groundwork or any of that. Not that I do a lot of that, but so I got started. We had some really bad weather, you know, the first week or so of January. So I started, my first ride was January 8th. And I didn't know if I was going to be able to do the challenge or not, but I wanted to get in and give it a try. And the longer I did it, the more weeks I did it, the more determined I was that I was going to accomplish it.
But you just didn't go out riding. You did all kinds. You made it an extra challenge in that you did all kinds of stuff.
Well, the other little element that I added for myself was to try to ride and do as many different things as possible, at least ride in different locations. So I was able to ride in 19 different locations.
Oh, wow.
And I did a lot of trail riding. I went to obstacle practices a couple of times. I went to three different clinics, kind of just for the hell of it. You know, it was like I went to a vaquero horsemanship clinic.
How was that?
A little dry for me.
Yeah.
But a lot of riding.
Did you get tangled up in the pole, or did you never get to the pole?
No, we didn't do any of that.
Oh, okay.
It was all about knowing where your horse's feet were and watching their steps and counting steps and going in circles. And my horse and I just kept thinking we wanted to be out on the trail. So I was kind of glad I went so that, and part of the reason I went was to find out if it was something I was interested in doing more.
And that
of.
Would
and,
be a no.
Yeah, and that would be a no. I can cross that one off my bucket list for sure. I went to an obstacle
clinic.
Well,
look at this way. You don't have to buy a new Spanish outfit now.
I sure don't. You know, the other gals that went to that clinic seemed to get a lot more out of it than I did, but I think they were a lot more deep thinkers than I am. I just want to get on a ride, you know, and they were really into counting the footsteps and making sure their horse's foot landed at just the right spot. And I just wasn't feeling it. But, and I was also that girl at the clinic because I showed up in shorts and I was just going to do the groundwork in shorts and then change. And I decided it was too hot. So I stayed in my shorts. Apparently my bridle was tied wrong. I had no chin strap. So the instructor just totally didn't take me seriously anyway. I was like sort of the laughing stock of the class.
You were...
Yes. I was that girl that day. And I felt it. I really felt it. but I just kind of powered through and said, well, you know what? My horse probably can outdo them on the trail any day. So...
And then you did a cow clinic.
I did a cow clinic, and that was real recently. It was really fun. My horse has been to team sorting before, so we were kind of, that one, we were the rock stars of the class because my horse was more experienced with cows than most of the other girls. So
now, I have to ask, how many other gated horses were there?
There were a couple. Not very many, but there were a couple. The instructor didn't seem to know as much what to do with us gated folks, but she did really well. It was, in fact, one girl showed up in all English gear. She had something looked like maybe a thoroughbred or something that she showed up, and she was all in her English outfit and her English saddle and everything.
Jennifer
went? No, but Jennifer could have gone. She would have been quite at home there. And we did some really basic things, but the cool thing was their cows were a little wilder than the ones that are typically at team sorting that are already burned out by the time we get to them. So we go out there and some of the cows are kind of big, and she turns the cows loose, and there's only like five or six of them, maybe a few more. And she turns them loose, and the cows are running around and they're bucking festively all over the place. And none of the girls are scared. All the girls just start laughing. The cows are running around. And we're like, everybody can't wait to go get the cows. So we had a really good time with that. She provided some good instruction on, you know, following the cows and how important it is to go slow instead of fast when you're chasing cows. And Michaela Walker is the name of the instructor. And she is doing another one next month that I'm going to try. And it's going to be some sort of cowboy dressage with cows. I have no
cowboy
idea what
dressage with the cows?
Yes.
Cows and dressage.
Well, you can probably guess which part of that I'll enjoy.
Are we trying to get the cows to do dressage? Is that the goal?
I don't know. Some of them were doing airs above the ground last time we were there, so I guess it could happen.
You need to come out to the Tara Carter. Now that you're good with cows, you need to come out and ride New Mexico.
You know, I would absolutely love to go. That's on my bucket list. I just, the planes, trains, and automobiles parts of that kind of throws me for a loop.
Out we can't drive there. It'll be like 3 days to get there.
Yeah.
It's like a day to get across Texas.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's a part of America I haven't seen yet, so I'm sure it would be cool.
Yeah.
But the clinics were interesting. The obstacle clinic I went to was, again, I went to two clinics that I was the rock star at and the one that I was a dismal failure at. But
2 out of 3 ain't bad.
2 out of 3 isn't bad. And, you know, the obstacle one was kind of basic for me. But the cow one was really fun. It was in a beautiful setting on a lake. So you're chasing cows and looking out at the lake and the boats and everything while you're chasing cows. So that was cool. But I also did, I did a lot of trail rides. I rode, you don't realize how many trailheads there are right around Ocala until you start trying to go to a different one.
We are lucky, lucky.
We really are.
I mean, there's a lot of them.
Yeah. I mean, I went to.
We probably have 1,000 miles of trails.
Yeah. I went to like 13 different trailheads, and that was, I didn't go to all of the trailheads in Ocala. So.
And you were out in the Ocala National Forest yesterday, out Silver Spring, right?
Yes.
And Ocala National Forest is huge. I mean, it is just, it takes up like a whole county. It's huge. And they have all kinds of wild critters there. And did you see any wild critters?
Not yesterday. We saw evidence of wild pigs, but for some reason, everybody else that goes riding sees wild pigs. And I've only seen wild pigs once in all the time I've lived in Ocala. And everybody else is always telling me that. And I think it's because the groups I ride with tend to be kind of noisy. So maybe all the pigs leave when they hear us coming.
Bears out there, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, we didn't see anything at all yesterday except for pretty water on the sides. That park used to be really dry, and with the rain this past year with the hurricane, it seems to have flooded some, and now they're putting in some concrete over the water parts, which would be good for you if you ever get out there with your carriage.
Yeah, it's always the carriage. We went out to Inglis Dam, which is out in Dunellen Way, and I like going out there just because it is perfect for the carriage. The sections are wide, and we discovered some new places out there, and we saw a black snake hanging from some grass. It was tall grass, and there was a black snake wrapped around the top of the tall grass. Jennifer saw it. It was right along the path, and it was really weird to see a snake grass, 5 feet off the ground. It was very strange. But it was beautiful out there yesterday. It is interesting. You talk about, you know, the horses being scared of the Paso because it's just weird. And the same is true with the carriage. Every trail riding horse that sees the carriage coming down, they have to stop and we have to go slowly by and the horses kind of freak out a little. So it takes some getting used to for them to see the carriages too.
Yeah. The more seasoned ones around here tend to be better about it. But did you see any alligators yesterday?
No, we didn't see any. There are alligator signs all over there. And swamp. I mean, it's swamp. There should be alligators.
Oh, I've seen alligators. Oh, have you? And in fact, I've heard don't go out there close to dark.
Because they come out to play?
They say apparently in the parking area where they are, they all kind of crowd around that, you know, the water that's all around there. They like kind of wait around on the banks, you know, close to there. Because yikes. I've always said, you know, why can't we just camp there sometime? It might be fun. And they said, you don't want to do that. because alligators come out at night.
There are camping spots there.
Well, we don't want to. Or we sure don't want to go to sleep and leave our horses there.
I thought
there.
About that. When I see all the alligator signs out there, I think my pony's only like 12'3". They could have him for lunch.
They sure could. They sure could. The same thing with Bar Hammock, where we've been riding some. There's that place where you go and there's all they say there are alligators there.
Well, I'm sure there are. I mean, it's just swampland and it's Florida. There's got to be alligators.
I don't know.
We have never seen one. All the times we've been out there, though, have we, Jennifer, seen an alligator out there?
Do you wonder what your horse would do if they did see one?
I've ever seen alligators riding was at Wendy's house.
Right. Yes. Wendy's house in her, like, backyard.
What did your horse see them?
Yeah, I had Beaker at the time, and he never twitched an ear.
Really?
No, didn't bother him at all.
I'm kind of wondering. My horse hasn't seen alligators, none of them, and I'm kind of. I really don't want to run into alligators. That's not on my.
From a distance, it'd be good.
That's definitely not on my bucket list.
From a distance, would be just fine.
Yes.
So yeah, that was fun yesterday. We had a good time out there too. So it was a beautiful ride, and we hope all of you get your weather back soon so you can enjoy too.
Definitely.
As Denise said, we'll be coming to the end of our season here in another month or two, and then it'll be so hot.
So, I know. I'm totally bummed about that.
I know. We're coming into our winter.
Yes.
Here very shortly. We're kind of in fall right now.
Yes, I know. It's like yesterday, it felt like fall.
It did. It was cool and it was breezy and it's the cool before the hot.
Yes.
It's arriving.
Yes, it was. We could have kept that weather. You know, indefinitely.
Well, while Jennifer gets Dr. Chang on to talk about our nutrition segment for this month with Omega Alpha Equine. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about allergies and respiratory health coming into that season. I took my allergy medicine this morning. I wanted to give you an update on Fallon Blackwood. You all recognize that name probably. That's the 23-year-old Alabama vet student who was arrested for fraud, basically. She was the one that had would respond to like Craigslist ads, people that wanted to find homes for their horses. And she would say, oh, I have this barrel racing horse that's retired and I kind of need a friend for him. And then people would inquire about their horses, and apparently her biggest trick was saying that she had to put them down, and because she couldn't provide pictures or anything of the horses because she was selling them at the auction for meat, more than likely. She had a bunch of explanations that she would use when people would inquire about their horses. She would say that they got hit by lightning, that they were died in a terrible accident, that she had to put them down because of colic, apparently was her most favorite thing, and she actually would provide them with a vet report. Unfortunately, when they went to look up Dr. Amy Bowling in Alabama, she was not a veterinarian nor ever existed.
Oh, no.
So she even created fake vet reports. And that's what she did in North Carolina for the case that she was arrested on. So basically, I think they arrested her for like fraud. I don't know what the exact charges were, but she waived extradition and is now heading to North Carolina. Now, North Carolina police did say that they expect that other states will also file charges against her and that there'll be more cases coming. There's a lot of investigations going on because apparently this was multiple states. They are saying that they think there were 28 in Georgia alone around the Atlanta area. And I know that Stolen Horse International Net Posse is saying that there could be up to 40 now.
I hope they nail her to the wall.
Yeah,
well, I really do.
Yeah, she's I think that you know, her life, obviously, she'll be kicked out of school. I know a lot of our, I think she'll be kicked out of school. I wouldn't know why they wouldn't get rid of her at this point. But our listeners have been writing to the college.
Oh, yeah, yes. I saw that. Yeah.
And encouraging them to discharge her from school. So I think that depending on how this case goes, we'll probably see that happening. But that's the latest update on Fallon Blackwood and her exploits down there. And thankfully, the police did take it seriously and actually did something about it, which with horses, they don't always do, depending on what county you're in. So let's hope that I think the paperwork that she provided is probably what's going to end up landing her in jail.
Yes, I think so too. Although apparently she also admitted to some people that she took their crappy horses and sent them to slaughter. So I saw some correspondence somebody posted from her that in which she said, you know, your horses weren't worth flipping and I took them to slaughter.
Oh, wow. Oh, so. There you go. Well, I guess she was honest with some of them.
She was honest with some of them, but she wasn't before the fact, just after the fact.
Yeah.
So, and hopefully more other horse traders will get the message, you know, based on what's happened to her.
Yep. All right, good. Well, Jennifer is lining up Dr. Chang right now to talk a little bit. And we also have some other great guests coming up. We're going to talk about, we're also going to be talking later today about microchips. We haven't addressed that since the FEI kind of made that mandatory. So we're going to be talking a little bit more about that. And there's some new technology coming in, and we're going to learn the latest on microchipping. But first, we have to talk to Dr. Chang from Omega Alpha Equine. He's here once a month to talk nutrition and health. Hi, Dr. Chang.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Good.
It's nice and warm down there.
Yes, it's beautiful, actually. And we have Denise with us today. Jamie is in Hawaii. She didn't want to talk to you today, so she went to Hawaii.
Good morning, Dr. Chang.
I know, Morning, Denise. It's nice to meet you on the radio.
Nice to meet you as well.
I don't think we've met in person yet.
No, not yet.
Well, Dr. Chang, while she's enjoying the warm weather on the beach in Hawaii, we are here coming into allergy season, aren't we?
Yes. It's worse up in the north here because of the short growing season. All the flowers come out in the spring. All the pollen comes out in the spring. So that's when a lot of people get allergies. And allergies have been known to happen with horses, too. There's a lot of horses that have a lot of runny noses around now, you know. So, you know, unfortunately, there is nothing we can do to stop the allergy response, right? But we can help with the runny noses and so on. You know, as you probably know, we have three respiratory formulas. We have the airwaves. We have the lung flush, and then we also have the herbal cough, and we have finally a combo, which is respiratory. but the three ones that we have are very unique in their actions. The lung flush would help dry up the mucus, help stop the runny noses. So what you'll see if you, especially around this time of the year, you have a lot of mucus formation, runny noses. If you start using the lung flush, you'll see, first of all, there's going to be an increase in the runny nose, meaning that you'll see a lot of stuff coming out, and then it'll dry up, right? And that's how it will be. It helps get rid of some of that mucus in the respiratory tract. The herbal cough we use when you have a situation like a stable cough, where you have coughing, you know, in the stables. So that will help with that. Last but not least, we have the airwaves. The airwaves, we use it as a bronchodilator. What the bronchodilator does is, for example, if you are show jumping, racing, right? Those are some of the things that you'd use the bronchodilator because it opens up the bronchioles, so gets more oxygen into the lungs. Then we also have the respiratory, which is a combination product of all three. And people always ask, well, why would I want to use the combination instead of just using any of the singles? Well, the combination is good for situations where you have issues such as COPD. Right? We put that formula together, and what we found with that horse COPD, usually they have constricted airways. they have mucus formation, so they feel a lot more comfortable when they use it respiratory, right? So those are some of the things that we have to help treat respiratory ailments.
Now, are these formulas, is it a daily dose and is it a paste or is it something you would top dress on
It's a daily dose, right? We suggest you syringe it in into the horse. And the reason we suggest you syringe is because if you put it on the food, right, unless sometimes people feed their horses grain. And if you put it like on grain, it's a liquid, so it works its way all the way down to the bottom of the bucket. So unless your horse is licking the bottom of the bucket, you're not going to get all of it, right? And if you syringe it in directly, we know you get all of it, right? And it's quite fast acting for a lot of horses, you know. And that last but not least, especially for the opening up the airways, it works really quickly. I know people top dress. You can also top dress, right, if you're not going into competition or anything, but if you want something fairly acting, fairly fast, right, you syringe it directly into their mouth.
Interesting. And so airwaves would be something you might use just in general to help maybe with speed or enhanced performance of a horse that was doing something like, say, barrel racing or?
Definitely. Just because it opens up those airways. And you know what? People have tried it. Like, I tell everybody, you know, you should give this a try yourself. You take a little bit, you take maybe about a teaspoon or a tablespoon, and if you drink it yourself, you'll see how it opens up your airways. And if it opens up your airways, you know it'll do the same thing for your horse.
Absolutely.
It's hard to tell sometimes whether your horse is allergies or whether he's truly getting sick. Right? So is it, what do you do in that case? I mean, you're not bad, I understand.
No, I'm not a fan, but what I would say, you got to use your common sense too, okay? It's like, you know when you have an allergy and you know when you're sick because it's you. And if your kids get sick, right, or they have allergies, you can also tell. Usually, you know it's the time of the year, you look at what to do. If they're running a temperature also, usually they're getting sick, right? If they're not running a temperature, all right, and they're just you know, runny nose, etc., you know, it could be just straight allergies. And especially at this time of the year, you know, chances are it's more allergies than getting sick. Right? So, yeah, you know, and one of the things, too, is that people say to me, well, you know, when in doubt, I always say start off with the respiratory because the respiratory has all three-in-one inside there. And, you know, and if you're not sure whether you have allergies or whether you have COPD or whether you know coughing, etc., or as a bronchodilator, it's all in the respiratory. It's just that if you use the three formulas that's specific for the job, you get a much better effect.
Which of these would you recommend for traveling horses? You know, horses that tend to get a little coffee in a trailer.
I would take the respiratory with me just because it has all three components in there, right? You take one bottle instead of carrying three, right? So that's the reason we put together the respiratory too. A lot of people use that one instead of the singles. But sometimes, you know, allergy season, runny nose, you know, you definitely just want to use a lung flush because it's a lot more effective.
You know, it's interesting too because... Go ahead. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
I was looking at the ingredients because one of the things we should mention for new listeners, and we have a lot of those in the last month, is that all of Omega Alpha products are all natural. So I'm always interested after having Dr. Wendy and dealing with Dr. Wendy and Chinese medicine so much, I'm always interested now to look at the ingredients that make that work, right? And like in respiratory, you have some things I can't pronounce. And then you have honeysuckle and you have things like peppermint and eucalyptus and rosemary and is there like an active and stinging nettles, by the way, which I was really surprised to find in there. We have a lot of down here and you get those on your legs and they itch for 3 days. I'm just saying I fought with that last week.
You see, rule number one, when you see the stinging nettles, do not go near them.
Don't touch them. I know.
No, but seriously, if you, all of these plants have active compounds in them. Okay. Oh, by the way, one thing I should also mention with these things, nothing gives you a positive drug test under FEI rules.
And we should mention that
so
too.
If you're worried about FEI rules, drug tests, none of this will give you a positive
on any
drug
of the products, right?
But getting back to, or any of our products, right?
Okay.
Getting back to efficacy though. There's a lot of compounds in all of these herbs that will they'll dry up mucus, have antihistamine effects, et cetera, right? The reason we use a combination as opposed to a single herb, because somebody say, well, this one herb does this, so why don't you just use that? Well, the problem with it is sometimes, depending on the horse, right, everybody's individual biochemistry is different. And then what will happen is that sometimes the horse will not respond to this herb. So rather than that happening, we have a whole bunch of different herbs, and each of these herbs, the compounds may act by a different pathway, biochemical pathway. And so if one biochemical pathway is blocked, right, it'll work via another pathway. So one of the things you will see effect. That's why we try to use the combinations. And secondly, if any horse has any issues with any of the herbs, and usually nobody has issues, but when I say issues, I'm talking like if you're going to have an allergic reaction, etc. Well, the fact that we use a lot lower doses of all the different compounds, right, lessens the chance of that happening also. The analogy I always use is that, you know, we all know that things like aspirin, which is like a non-sterile anti-inflammatory, will give you ulcers, right, if you use it long-term. But if I was to tell you we'll take aspirin, we'll take some Advil, and we'll take some Tylenol, and we put all three together at one-third the dose, normal dose, right? And if you're taking it for a headache, well, one-third the normal dose will probably get rid of your headache, but you won't give you the side effects that is associated with aspirin, such as the ulcer effect, or the damage by Tylenol on the liver, or the kidneys by Advil. So it's a way of mitigating side effects also.
Got it. Okay. And, you know, I'm just looking at, I'm loving looking at the different ingredients, because I got a tail, stinging nettle is not something I ever thought I'd see in a product that we give anything. So that's.
Yeah. Stinging nettle, you have to remember, stinging nettle only gives you a stinging effect because it's fresh. Once it's dried, you know, the drying process also converts some of those compounds from one form to another form. Right, and sometimes just a little conversion or the oxidation process or something changes the way it reacts with the body. Right, so I mean, there's a lot of good scientific evidence on these herbs because they've been studied for a long time. But last but not least, I always say to people, you know, these herbs have been around for a long time. People have been using them for a long time. So we didn't just wake up one morning and say, "Hey, why don't we try this?"
No, you know, in Chinese medicine, we're talking thousands of years, right? Basically.
That's right. Yeah. Our safety has already been well documented for years, because if people were dropping like flies, or animals were dropping like flies after the use, nobody would touch it.
I'm just curious, how do you extract the good stuff from the herb? Is it like, are they boiled?
We use a decoction process. What that basically means is that we bring the temperature up to boiling or less, depending on the herb, because sometimes if you bring it up too high, the extra heat will destroy the compounds that we want, right? So we bring it up to a temperature depending on the product, right? And then we hold it at that temperature, and it's like a steeping process with hot water. And then what we do, we concentrate it up by evaporating the water off under pressure and then in a nitrogen atmosphere. So that way we get rid of some of that water, and we concentrate it up that way.
I just have this picture of you with a big cast iron kettle and a long wooden spoon back there stirring. In there.
I'm thinking of lots of little scientific beakers and things myself.
No, we don't have a long wooden spoon in here, and it's a big kettle. You can swim in there. You know that.
So now I got to ask you this, too, because I've seen this on your website. By the way, the new website is terrific. OmegaAlpha.us is really good. So everybody should head over there. It's very clean and easy to get around now. But when I'm looking at your thing, your products, and it says manufactured under strict GMP standards, what does that mean?
GMP is called good manufacturing practice. It's a way, it's like the pharmaceutical standards, okay? And basically what it is, you know, it's a process of cleaning your equipment. It's a process of checking all the raws when they come in. It's a process, it's documentation of all of it. What it basically means is that if I was to sell you a bottle of anything, right, there's a lot code on it. On that lot code, from that lot code, I can go back all the way back to the raw material as it come in, and I can tell you which batch it came in from, etc. That's one of the steps of GMP, right? It's a whole process of ensuring purity and its efficacy in all of the products that you produce.
So you clean the big cast iron pot before you do the next batch of something else.
Of course, yeah. We have to do that with in between. It's even the process of cleaning out your machines. You have to document it. You have to show that it's being cleaned, et cetera, et cetera. Even the facilities, you document the facilities where people, where we have a cleaning crew come in and clean, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a whole long process. And it's all called good manufacturing practices.
Well, it's no wonder your products are so high quality then.
Yeah, we are licensed by Health Canada also, in addition to all of that, right? So basically, we are regulated by the government, albeit it's a Canadian government,
right,
as opposed to the U.S. government. But, we get their stamp of approval, let's put it that way, in order for us to be in operation.
Well, you can find all of these terrific products at OmegaAlpha.us, and just click on the little American flag up there in the corner, and it'll take you to everything that you can find here. You can find them at retailers. I know a lot of the retailers around here now are carrying your products where I haven't seen them before, starting to pop up. And you can also go to that website and get all the information about the different products. Anything else, Dr. Chang?
Yeah, before I sign off, I want to give a shout-out this weekend. Omega Alpha is going to be at the Equine Affair in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Booth number 322. Jeffrey's going to be there.
Oh, everybody, if you haven't met Jeffrey, you've got to go do that. That's required.
Just make a note, and when you pop by, say hi to Jeff.
Okay, definitely say hi to Jeff, and tell him you heard about him on the radio. Tell him you heard about it on the radio. Jeff's a good guy, and he can help you with whatever. If you have questions, he'll be able to help you out. That's Equine Affair. Yeah. Are you guys going to be at Rolex, too, or the show formerly known as Rolex this year?
Yes, I do believe we have a booth there.
Okay.
So the Equine Affair is happening this weekend coming.
Right.
April 12th to the 15th.
Okay, good.
All
and
right.
Then, sounds good. Thank you, Dr. Chang. Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, Glenn. Nice meeting you, Denise. And
thank you, Dr.
Have a
Chang.
Good day.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
I'm telling
bye-bye.
You. Glenn, I definitely need to have a consultation with him. With nine horses, I swear I've got something.
You have everything. Just buy one of everything.
I probably do. I could just make a whole list.
Yeah, and just send him cases of stuff.
I'm telling you,
I
could.
You live in Florida, too. We tend to have allergies down here.
Yeah, well, we have allergies. I have senior horses. I have everything. You name it. So,
well, let's go right to our next guest. We have Jean Ann Mayhall, who is president of Microchip ID Incorporated. Now, it's been a while, actually, since we talked about microchips. There's been some changes on the FEI level as far as microchipping is concerned. And I know there's probably been some technology updates as well since we talked about it last. So, Jean, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you.
Appreciate it. Did I say your last name right, Mayhall?
That's correct.
Yay.
One little correction. The name of the company is Microchip ID Systems.
Oh, Systems. Okay, good. All right. Microchip ID systems. So now tell us, there's been some changes in the horse world here recently. And we have FEI asking for microchips, and more we're seeing more of it. This has been a long time in coming. So why do you think, obviously it's working, or we wouldn't have agencies requiring it, right?
It is working, and I think that the agencies that are requiring it, it's kind of interesting because they're using the microchip for their needs, and that's what's so cool about the chip. I mean, everyone has a different need, a different reason for chipping, and you're talking, I'm sure, about FEI. Yeah. USEF is now included in that. So,
right.
It's working really well for their needs, which is making sure that the horse is the horse.
Yeah, they're making sure the right horse is competing in that dressage test that day.
Exactly.
And you know, most of us will be using it to make, you know, if our horse gets lost or gets away on us, and, you know, as a form of identification to get our horses back. That's what most of us will be using it for.
Yes, and I think that was my point, and that it can be, you know, yes, you do have entities like USEF and FEI, and actually we provide chips to almost all of the major eventing horse groups right now for those reasons. But what we're finding out, and what we've always known, is that the horse owners are actually, even though they may be sort of forced into the microchipping situation because of their eventing, they're learning that there are so many benefits to the chip aside from that. And you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we're in South Louisiana. And after Katrina, it was just heartbreaking. Horses separated from owners. We also do a lot of work with the wildfire entities, floods, and things like that. And you're right. It's getting that horse back that really counts.
Yeah, look at California last year. Perfect example. With all the fires and the horses that they just let loose, basically, to keep them alive.
Yes. And you don't see it coming. You know, you don't see it coming. The same thing happened after Hurricane Katrina. It's interesting in our state, and it really had nothing to do with my company. It's just the way it happened. Is you're very hard pressed in the state of Louisiana to even find a horse that's not microchipped, because it was mandatory about 12 years ago for Coggins. So when Katrina hit, yes, all of the horses were chipped, and that was great. But guess what? The owners were separated from their horses, and the owners were not even to be found, nor were their veterinarians, because everyone is either flooded out or had to evacuate. And that's when we realized really how important it was to have the microchip be that connection point between the owner and the horse, wherever they are.
I'm interested in what you just said about the Coggins. Is that required in Louisiana that you microchip with the Coggins?
Actually, I misspoke a little bit on that. You have to have permanent identification for the horse. Permanent. And the choices are brand, tattoo, microchip.
Interesting.
And so what happened, and this was our Department of Ag that did this, and I have to tell you, everybody in our state, horse owners, just screamed and yelled about that 12 years ago because they, you know, they wanted a choice. They didn't want to be told they had to chip. But what happened was the veterinarians embraced it, horse owners embraced it, and I would say within a matter of, I mean, under a year, people were just loving the fact that they were able to have this little tiny device that could connect them to their horse. And yes, it is required. And now everybody just uses a chip for Coggins.
I think that's genius.
It's really, you know, Louisiana is not the top at everything in the United States, but we did that right. and it's just really heartwarming after Katrina. And I keep mentioning that because really it's sort of the prototype for whether you're a fire, a wildfire in California or a flood in Missouri or a theft in Italy. It really doesn't matter the problem. It's just as important to the horse owner. And so what we learned was that here we had hundreds and hundreds of horses that had to be left behind. And their owners were gone, and we didn't know where their owners were. But the horses were chipped, so the rescue teams could come in, disaster recovery teams could come in, scan the horse, call us, and we would have the owner's information. And that was how many years ago? Long time ago. Nowadays, our dashboard for our owners has been updated so that they have 100% control over all the information about their horse. So let's say you're in Ocala and something terrible happens, a hurricane drifts that way, and you have to evacuate up to Georgia. on the road, and you're separated from your horse. On the road, you can literally bring out your phone and push a button on your dashboard with us, and our office will immediately know that your horse is missing or that you've been separated from your horse. It's just technology.
Fallen.
You know, it's a great
thing. Can't get up.
Right. And, you know, you can change your contact info. Like, you could go in and say, you know, temporarily I'm in Georgia with my sister, or my cell phone was left behind. Here's my new number. You can change anything that you need to change on the fly from any device and let us know where you are, so that when the good guys or the rescue teams come in, and I'm talking about disaster recovery, and they call us, we've got your latest info.
Okay, so a couple things that confuses
it's great,
people.
It's great technology, and it really, if you're ever on the receiving end of a phone call in our office, I mean, it'll bring tears to your eyes to hear the reunion with the horse and owner. It's a great thing.
I'm sure.
A couple things that confuses people is there's lots of microchip companies. So does it matter? You know, is one microchip like another micro? You know, is there one registry, or do they, you know, how do the rescuers know which registry to go to? Does that make any sense?
It makes tons of sense, especially in my world. So that's about four questions, and they're all excellent.
Yep. Okay.
Excellent questions.
Good.
So let's start with, are they all the same? No, of course. If you could line up 10 microchips, they would all look the same to you. But just like any technology, whether it's a computer or a cell phone or a camera, you know, you need to do your homework. Okay, you need to do your homework when you're purchasing a chip for your horse, because first of all, it has to last for the lifetime of the horse. So you want to make sure the company you're dealing with is reputable, and you know, people know how to do that. They know how to shop. Is there one registry? At the moment, there is not one universal registry because there aren't enough microchipped horses yet. So what we did in January of 2017 is we've been in the microchip business 30 years. So we kind of, you know, this is what we do. And we launched for the horse industry for free a website called equinemicrochiplookup.org. Equine, it is what it is, equinemicrochiplookup.org. It's free. We are a big participant in the pet industry, so we knew that this was going to be a need for horses as we all moved along. And you can go there, anyone can go there, and type in any chip that they found in a horse and push a button, and it will check databases and return information to you for free. Again, there's no cost, you don't have to log in or any of that. And it's the beginning step, it's our first step, and that is, we hope, move along to become the universal registry that you're talking about, the universal database search engine that you're talking about, Glenn.
Right, yeah, well, that, you know, that kind of makes sense. Now,
yep.
So people, you know, we bought from Stolen Horse International, actually, Renette Posse, at one of the shows we were at when we bought ours.
Mm-hmm.
And we brought them home, and she said, you can do it yourself. And then we looked at the size of the need, and we said, hell no. So that's at the point where the vet came out. And, of course, the vet did it for us and made it look easy and like it was no big deal. But have the chips themselves gotten smaller?
Well, you're just full of good questions, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yes. The microchip is you know, it's real boring if I gave you all the technical description about it. But, again, we've been in the business 30 years, and there are basically two parts to a microchip situation. There's the microchip itself. That's a device, a little tiny, tiny device. And then there's the chip registration. You know, you buy a car, or you buy something, and it's got a VIN number or some sort of ID number, but it's not really yours until you register it under your name. So they're the two parts, the chip and the registration. To your question about size, yes. Again, back to the first part, are all microchips the same? Of course, absolutely not. We brought to the market, I guess it's about 2 years ago now, what we've referred to as a mini equine chip. Microchip is a microchip, but a mini microchip is even smaller.
Mm.
And people may say, oh, well, okay, great, the technology is smaller. But what you have to think about is the horse. Smaller chip means a smaller needle, which means easier on the horse.
Yeah. Because I looked at that thing and I was terrified, to be honest with you. I was like, holy crap.
Right. Well, you know, the needles, I'll tell you this, to put it in perspective. If I blindfolded you and put a mini equine chip on the table in front of you and took your blindfold off and said, now, Glenn, where's the chip? You probably wouldn't be able to find it.
Oh,
it's
wow.
that tiny. The mini chip, I tell you, our veterinarians, hundreds of them, they just love the mini equine chip because it's so gentle on foals. And, you know, we use that same chip on baby gorillas and elephants and all kinds of really large animals, even larger than a horse. And it works great. So we're really proud of that new technology, and it is really, really popular because of what you just said. I mean, just for perspective, you saw that needle that you used. The mini chip needle fits inside of that needle that you were using.
Wow. Well, so I always thought that the microchips were about the size of a grain of rice. Are they smaller than that now?
Right. That's been sort of the famous industry line for decades, you know. But yes, how can I give perspective? I would say you have rice that's cooked and rice that isn't cooked. I would say it's small. It's smaller than an uncooked grain of rice.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it's tiny.
Here's a crazy question for you, but not so crazy in today's world. How far are we away from having a chip that's also a GPS where you can locate your horse?
You know, the technology is totally different. So microchip, and I'm so glad you asked that question because I want to be clear with people. I don't want them to feel like a microchip is a GPS device.
Right.
Here's the deal with GPS. GPS require, as we all know, if you've ever had any dealing with GPS devices, they all require some sort of power source, battery, recharge, mm-hmm. I mean, some sort of power powers GPS.
And usually an antenna of some sort, too, which...
Correct, yeah. Correct. And they also work by satellite. And if you have GPS in your cell phone, people say, well, it's free. Well, it isn't because your cell phone is charging a monthly fee, right?
Right,
GPS in a microchip, it's two opposing technologies. Not opposing in a bad way, but they just operate differently. So microchips operate off of a radio wave, not bouncing off of a satellite.
Mm.
And that's really important to know because USAF and FEI and the international standard for microchips requires a very particular radio wave. So when you buy a microchip, it needs to be a universal type of radio wave that microchip
operates. And that's why all the readers can pick it up, because it's a certain frequency.
Yes. Many years ago, things were incompatible. And the horse industry didn't really have a problem with that because they weren't chipping. But the dog industry did.
Mm.
You know, when we first started with dogs, there wasn't a single dog chipped. Today, there are probably, you know, 800 million dogs chipped and the same number, if not more, of cats. So universality and universal reading became critical. But the horse industry wisely, thank goodness, it wasn't us, it was the horse industry itself that said, you know, we're going to set a standard in horses. And so it's an international standard. It's called the ISO, International Standards Organization, and it's a certain radio wave frequency. So every chip that we sell to the horse industry is always that certain frequency that it has to be.
Okay, so now...
And that would be one tip to you. That would be one tip to your listeners, too. If you're going to buy a chip for your horse, make sure it's an ISO, international standard frequency.
That's a good thing to point out. And then the other thing is do what I didn't do, and that's actually register the thing within a year or two, and I, of course, didn't do that, and now I think we've done
Uh-oh.
That. So, but that's, you know, we bought it, and we put it in, and then I forgot to register it. So you got to register it, too, or it doesn't do any good, right?
Well, it's pretty useless without it. We operate the only all-horse microchip registry in North America. It's called EPR, Equine Protection Registry. It's the place where you go. You can go online or you can call after your horse is chipped, and you take complete control of that chip from that point forward. You register all of your info, your alternate contact, which is critical in a disaster, your veterinarian, any important things, any important features about your horse. We're even working with the Colorado folks to make sure that you can download or upload, depending on what you're doing, your brand inspection papers. We did a big Colorado Rocky Mountain Expo. 30,000 people, I think, were there, and that was a request that came out of that meeting.
Well, that's interesting.
We'll
that kind of makes
well.
Sense, though, for those horses. It really does.
It does. And really, any documentation that you may want, we'll be adding that soon to our equine protection registry. I think that is why a lot of the eventing horses have chosen, you know, they have to chip for USAF, but they've chosen our registry to register their members' horses because it's an added benefit to having the chip. Other than just mandatory chipping, it's all the right reasons, all the big reasons why a horse owner would like that protection.
So do the chips also have the ability to contain information like health certificates and COGINs and shot records and things like that? Or is that on the horizon?
Also a great question. The answer is no. The microchip, the best way I can equate it short and sweetly for you guys is it's just like our Social Security number. You know, someone, if you call your bank or you call just about anyone these days, the first thing they're going to ask you is your Social Security number. The difference is that you can speak and you can give your Social Security number, you know, or your ID number, your account number. Horses can't. And so the microchip is sort of their Social Security number.
Yeah, but couldn't that...
And it is tied.
Couldn't that be? Couldn't that information eventually be tied to the app, to the somebody scans it?
It is.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but to answer the question, does the microchip itself?
No, but I think you meant the app or the database have that information, or could the database have that information?
The database has all of that information, okay. But it's 100% privacy protected and controlled by the owner. But the chip itself just has a unique Social Security number for that horse.
Right. Yep. Yeah, so that makes sense. I mean, I think we're coming to a point today where this is all going to get easier to identify horses for many different reasons, theft or for travel and shows. I mean, you know, for years we've used tattoos. You know, we might get to the point where we don't need them anymore either. You know, who knows?
Right.
You know, and that's true. And I think that the two, it doesn't mean that one should be exclusive over the other. I think the big difference with the microchip is it's always with the horse. It can't be altered. It's permanent. We guarantee our chips for the life of the animal. The same chip you put in a horse is the same one we put in an elephant or a fish or even a baby gorilla. So it's something that, you're right, I think technology will move along, but you always want to have the owner being able to control who has access to their data. That's really important. We hear it all the time, and it really is important.
Especially after Facebook in the last month. That's
well, I wasn't going to bring it up, but yes.
I'll bring it up. So he's going to Congress today, so.
Yes, it's crazy, right? And so it's even more our privacy policy. It's all over our website and has been for – it's nothing new with us. We've always protected privacy. But what we love about the Equine Protection Registry is that it's a one-time lifetime charge. That's it, because the owner's doing all the work.
Well,
they're maintaining the data.
How much does the microchip cost, and how much does it cost to register then? And then there's no subscription fees after that?
No, not with our company, not even for dogs or cats. What? I just don't think it's necessary because the owner is the one that's maintaining their records. You know, they have control.
What about
if they give you the cost?
Yeah, go ahead.
If the chip is transferred or if the horse is transferred, does the new owner then have to pay a fee again, or how does that work?
Yes. So let me ask... it's Glenn, right?
Yep,
Let me ask Glenn's question first. So the cost depends on how many you're getting, like anything. Right now, anybody, and our costs are right up front. We're extremely transparent as a company. You can go to our website. You can see everything. You can see what it costs. You can even order a chip. I do recommend that you have your vet put it in, even the mini chip. Yes, I'm sure you could do it yourself, but I think it would be great.
I recommend it, too.
Right. But Glenn, if you saw this mini chip needle, you really would, your jaw would drop how tiny it is. It's just great technology. But to the cost, so it's 20 right now, and you know, you can go see it right now. It's nothing. It's been like this for 2 years on our website. Our new price on the mini equine chip and full registration with a dashboard for the owner is $25.50.
That's it?
For as long as you own your horse.
That's
the chip and the lifetime registration.
Wow.
Now, we have a lot of barns that order chips as a, you know, they don't pay that price because they order 5 or 10 or more at a time. And so a chip can be as low as $6.75. Again, it's right on our website. That's the Equine ISO microchip. That's the one you want to get. $6.75 if you're getting, you know, a lot of them, say, 15, 25 or more. The registration price on the website is $24.95. But again, that's why that single chip is such a great deal, because it's $25.50 for the chip and the lifetime registration.
Wow.
Okay, and then to your point of transfer of ownership, yes, all the time that happens in the horse industry. But we don't let you just let somebody call us up and say, I'm the new owner of this horse. That is definitely not the way that it works with us. The owner has to call us, let us know, has to give us information about the new owner, and then, yes, we will transfer it if the owner wants us to. And the new owner starts all over with a new registration. Not a new chip, but a new registration. And all of those also will be registered and show up in the equine microchip lookup tool with a little American flag symbol next to it so that you know that horse has a registered owner.
All right. Well, we're running
out of
time.
That's a lot of information.
We're running out of time here. Give the website again.
The one that they would go to is microchipidequine.com.
Microchipidequine.com. And I was just there, and it's very simple to get around. And you're right, it came up at like $25. So it's right there, right on the website. And, you know, for $25, why not? I mean, we spend that on dinner.
That's so incredibly affordable.
Yeah. You'll spend that nowadays at Five Guys getting two burgers. So you might as well protect your horse.
It's interesting you say that. That's our slogan is when people say, why should I microchip my horse? We say, why shouldn't you for that price?
Right, exactly. I mean, it's true. Well, very good. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, and we're glad we got the update on microchipping.
Well, I'm so glad you gave us the opportunity. You guys have a great day and great week.
Right, Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Jennifer, we registered Scooter. Look him up on that. Go to equinemicrochiplookup.org and see if he's on there. We'll get a report before the end of the show. If we can find it.
Maybe you can still figure out a way to register him.
I think she did register
you probably
him, though.
Can.
I think we finally did register him after all this time. All right, let's next. We're heading. No breaks today. We are just rocking and rolling, and we're heading over to Tryon, North Carolina, home of the World Equestrian Games, coming up to Leslie, who is apparently stranded there. Hi, Leslie.
Good morning.
Are you stranded? What happened?
The car's at the dealership now, but I don't know. My car didn't want to go home.
Oh, it doesn't like your car doesn't like Tennessee, like North Carolina better?
I guess so, yeah.
I think it's cold both places now, right?
Yes.
Right. Yep.
So
but, I've spent the last few days at the Tryon International Equestrian Center, which of course is hosting WEG in September. And they had the four course trials, which they do, which they host in every year, and then also the eventing and the vaulting test event were happening this weekend. So it was my first time at the Horse Center since the American Eventing Championships in September, and there's new stuff, there's stuff in the works, and there's stuff that is still kind of in the imagination, left to the imagination right now, but they say is coming. So it was pretty interesting to see.
I talked to Samantha. We talked to Samantha on Friday, and she said basically it's one big construction zone everywhere.
I can just imagine.
Yeah, lots of red clay dirt everywhere and lots of bulldozers pushing it around. You really have to use your imagination to envision what is coming. But yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the event over the weekend. So this was a test event, and how did everybody feel it went? And what was your thoughts on the cross country course? And you know what was and who won the 3-star? All of those questions.
Yeah. let's see. Well, yeah, they had the 3-star Philip Dutton and Z. Won it, and they ran the cross country over. The cross country takes place on sort of an adjoining property that is a converted golf course called White Oak, and the course was very much the same as it was for the AACs for the fork last year. They are playing their cards clearly very close to the chest as far as we're not. Not yet seeing what's going to be on the course in September, but what they did run, rode really well. There are very few problems. Everyone had to work on the footing was a little hard, but they were watering and we got some rain and everyone, by all accounts, the footing was good to ride on. Time one thing that was interesting was. It's one of those, haven't we all dreamed of galloping on a fairway before?
Yeah,
every
girl's dream, the golf course, tearing it up. Yep.
So it's kind of interesting to hear what it's like to actually gallop on, a golf course. And it's so undulating. So it's like lots of little changes in terrain, and so that.
Did they take the sand traps out, or did they leave them in? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, no more sand traps. Oh, okay. Or they just turned them into the water complex.
I can just picture the horses having to run through the sand and over the little hills and.
Yeah. But I guess you kind of really have to keep your foot to the foot on the gas to make time when you're sort of always going up a little or down a little. And the biggest up is yet to come. There's the end of the course ends with this great big hill that is still kind of under construction.
So they're going to end on an uphill?
Yeah, it's going to be a big old long uphill stretch.
Isn't that unusual to end on an uphill like that?
It should be interesting there, and they're going to end it. So it'll be a real test of fitness, and then the finish will be.
You better have some gas left in the tank by the time you get there, huh?
Right. Yeah, everyone's saying you gotta come here with a fit horse, So where the Derby field is, if anyone's been there, it's a big grassy, I think it's like 12 acres or something. They're putting in another sort of temporary main arena there where eventing, show jumping, dressage and straight dressage and straight show jumping will take place. And so there'll be sort of a pop-up arena, semi-permanent, kind of like they did for the 2012 Olympics. They just it just goes up in a few weeks. But they're going to end the cross-country course in that main arena.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is something they've kind of done, that's how badminton ends.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting. So people, that'll be a good viewing experience for folks.
How is it going to be getting from the main facility down to cross country during WAG? Because are they going to have shuttles? What are they going to do? Because it's a distance, isn't it?
For the horses, it's about a mile hack to the warm up from the barns, and there's a dedicated hacking path which they were using this weekend. And then for spectators, they'll be shuttling people in. You can walk there from the main venue if you're feeling ambitious. They'll also have shuttle buses and golf carts, and so you'll sort of park in the main parking and then take a shuttle over to cross country.
Did you get to watch any of the vaulting?
I just missed it.
Did you?
It seems
that arena from the pictures I saw looked low. I mean, it just looked low.
Oh, the ceiling
was
low?
Yes. But maybe that's deceptive in the pictures I was seeing. I don't know.
It's not huge. It's not like this gigantic, like at the horse park, their arena where they had the reining and the Altec arena. Yeah, it's not like that. It's considerably smaller, and definitely a lower ceiling. It's more of a covered arena than it is.
So what good gossip are you hearing? We heard rumors that they were being told that the riders were being told that they will not be staying on grounds after all. That was a rumor we heard.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of the many question marks up in the air. They've got a big plot of land, several acres, like flattened out, and they're moving in where they say that they're putting in athlete housing, and it's all modular housing. So they sort of build it elsewhere and then
we only have 5 months.
No, this is all a big question mark.
They got to put plumbing and electric, whether it's modular or not. All that crap has to be hooked up.
It's going to end up being a tent city,
sure.
Isn't
yeah.
it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right? That's definitely a big question mark. I guess the plan B is they've got hotel, rooms cordoned off at an area. Not that there's any, like, real close area hotels.
Right, exactly.
But at least the athletes should have somewhere to stay.
I'll tell you, I talked to an endurance rider
whether
last
it's on the grounds or not, I think is a little up in the air.
I talked to an endurance rider. Their test event's coming up, and they were told they can't camp there. And they were like, hell, the hell, we're not camping there. Endurance riders do not leave their horses. They will be camping there.
Oh.
they don't leave their horses.
And they're not divas either.
No, so. They don't leave their horses. They'll be sleeping in the stalls. They're going to have to be escorted out by police if they're...
Yeah, I think they're having the reining test event there, maybe today, this week. And then they're, and I guess endurance.
Now, will the reiners be in the building that the vaulters were in? Is that what, because they have to be inside.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they're going to be in that
Is there
building,
stands so. In there yet? Not that I saw in the pictures.
Not really. No. Okay. Not so much. Yeah, it's very much, that building is a work, they've got still quite a lot of work to do.
And now the most important question for you and I is, we saw the framing, the steel framing for what's going to be the media center, but they're going to have to put a floor and a roof on it at some point, I think, or we're going to get very wet. <in there.
laughs> Right. They've just got the big, big steel frame up that it's situated between the George Morris Arena that's already, it's kind of the centerpiece of the venue as it stands, and then it will be, so you should be able to look out on, so the media center will be on the first floor, and then there's two floors above that will be, VIP kind of hospitality,
gotcha.
And so people can kind of see what's going on, and one thing that they are making a top priority is, they're like, they do not want any hangry, grumpy.
That was my next question. France, that was the problem in France, right? Everybody starved to death. The lines were like 12 miles long to get food.
Yeah. So they know that they want to treat the journalists well so that they get, so we're happier.
Are we going to get food? Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, there's going to be a dedicated, I see where you're going with this. There's going to be, Glenn, a dedicated cafeteria just for media.
Just for us?
So there you go. There will be food.
Oh.
Whether there will be an open bar remains to be seen.
Leslie, you didn't tell them that's a demand? You didn't put that in your credentials?
Positive press and all that.
That's right. It should. Our credentials for media should have a little drink cup in the corner, a little beer flask right in the corner.
Yeah. Like, I mean, seriously, it's like that's...
Hey, we have to be there 15 hours a day every day. We should at least have a beverage, right?
A beverage?
If you remember right in 2010, were you working there yet? Were you at Wagon 10 as a media?
2010, I was there, but I wasn't working it.
Mm. Yeah, we had the tent in the back, which when it got windy, would flap around. it was interesting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was an interesting setup. I mean, it worked, but this sounds like it's going to be much nicer.
Be plush. Yeah, we have the media. There's dedicated media parking.
Oh, really? I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
Oh, so you might not have to trek so far.
I won't have to take a bus over like everybody else? I'm liking this media gig. Nope. We don't make much money, but this sounds fun.
But, I don't know. So, I think the bottom line, lots of question marks up in the air, but, they are working. They're literally working through the night. 24/7 on this thing, and looking around, it kind of looks like, it's hard to sort of imagine it. And who knows? But they say they're going to get it done.
Five months is not much time.
It's not a lot of time. Not a lot of time. Yeah, I mean, look how long it takes. You see a hotel going up, and it'll take what? Years before.
Well, look how long it's taking to do that equestrian center here
World
in Ocala.
Equestrian Center.
It's never going to get built.
Yeah, boy. Whew, that's huge. Too.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you, Leslie, for giving us the update on Tryon up there. So it was good competition overall. Everybody was happy.
Yeah, everyone was happy. And it was supposed to rain all day on Saturday, and it didn't. And the weather kind of held out for us. Yesterday was beautiful. And,
good. So now we hope that you get your car back and you get to head home at some point.
some point, yeah.
All right, Leslie, thanks a bunch. Of course, you can find all of Leslie's reports at Eventing Nation and HorseNation.com. She's here every Monday at 10 o'clock. Thanks, girl.
Safe travels.
Sure. Have a great week, guys.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, there you go. There's the latest update from Tryon. Still a work in progress.
I tell you, I just don't know how they're going to get that all done.
I don't know if you noticed the pictures that Samantha posted. If you want to see pictures, go to 2018 WEG Show on Facebook. And she posted a bunch of pictures from there. And it does look like a Tinker Toy set, you know, with all the bulldozers and the equipment and big piles of dirt everywhere.
And so they're doing test events there in the midst of all this?
Yeah, they have to, because the test events mainly for the organization to see mm-hmm. that everything's running, and then they know, okay, we have to move this over here. You know, the judges didn't work there. You know, they kind of play with all of the organization of the event itself.
Are test events actual competitions?
Yeah, oh, yeah, this was. This was, this was an actual event, and the vaulting was too.
Interesting.
Yep. So, and the endurance race coming up will be an endurance race. I mean, it'll be an actual race. I think the endurance riders said that they have 10, 12 different countries coming that are going to be there.
Really?
Because everybody wants to check it out before the WEG, too.
Well, definitely.
If you can get in to do it.
That's crazy. So they'll ship their horses over and everything?
Yeah, some of them already have their horses here. They'll be in the United States, and some that are, you know, Canada or South America will ship up. Probably not Europe. They probably won't ship them over. But a lot of them are here already. Well, there you go. That's what's going on over in Tryon. And thank you so much for Denise for joining us. We really appreciate it. Now, if somebody wants to be a guest on our show, we don't often announce this. How do they get a hold of you?
Just shoot me an email at guest, that's G-U-E-S-T, at horseradionetwork.com.
Okay, so, do you have a report on the chip?
We got the results there.
Okay.
On the chip.
Is Scooter, did you find Scooter?
I did not.
Oh, no.
Scooter doesn't exist?
Apparently not. I typed his number into the little look up a chip number.
At
and it just said
microchip
call
lookup.org.
The manufacturer. So there we go.
Oh, so we're not. Are we registered? Are we sure we registered?
It's registered with found.org. So I sent a message to found.org and said, does found.org connect to equine microchip? Because what would have to happen is equine microchip would have to be able to scan found.org's database.
Right. And then maybe they're still working
on
that.
To do that. And maybe they're still working on that. I don't know. So, it's that. And I think that's another reason people are hesitant to do the whole microchipping thing. And I did look up on, which one was it? I looked up another one on Avid, which is the manufacturer of our chip. And to be in the Avid database, it's a one-time fee of $20.
Mm.
So it's a lifetime fee of $20. So it's, you know, a $25 to $30 range lifetime fee is not unheard of. Okay, so that's a reason. But so I totally get why people are I just don't want to deal with it. It's too confusing. So I get it.
Yeah, you would hope that at some point it would become completely universal, so no matter who you went with, you would still be able to track everything.
Yeah, but it sounds like a simple thing. Well, just make your website connect with their website. Well, because of firewalls and security, because there's secure information in your account, they can't just willy-nilly connect to each other. It's not that simple.
Yeah, yeah. Privacy policies and all that. So, unless you're Facebook, and then you can do whatever the hell you want.
Exactly.
And then you can do whatever you want. That's right.
All right. Well, yeah, if you want to reach Denise, it's guest at horseradionetwork.com. Thank you so much, Denise, for filling in today.
Thank you for having me.
We have an endurance show. Karen's here tomorrow. We'll have an endurance episode, speaking of endurance. And then Wednesday, I know a lot of you have taken a liking to Sally from Heels Down, who does our 10 o'clock couple of times a month reports. Well, she agreed this morning to come on and co-host the whole show with me. So if you get a chuckle out of Sally, we'll be together on Wednesday morning co-hosting. And then Friday, of course, it's really bad ads. Get your ads into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Get them into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. And Thursday's Mary Kitzmiller. Jennifer and Mary Kitzmiller will talk training on Thursday. So we have a full week of shows, even without Jamie. Screw her. We don't need her. She can be out there in Hawaii just sitting on the beach having fun.
I bet she's not giving us the least thought.
Oh, she has not thought about us since she left, I guarantee you. I guarantee you. Thanks, everybody. All right, take care. This is the normal point where Jamie says spayed neutered geld. We'll just say microchip.
Microchip.
And then spayed neutered geld.
All of the above.